Okay, folks, I think we'll get started. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for coming to this session on networking for cloud services in Windows Server 2012 R2. My name is Prasad. I'm a senior program manager in Windows networking team. I work out of the India office. I always find it interesting how this conference organizers always manage to give me a session on the last day of the conference, and that too just after lunch, after making me travel for 12 hours to get here from India. They must be thinking, I take it in a positive way, because they must be thinking that I must be a really good speaker to be able to hold people's attention even at this hour. Okay, so let's get started. I'll do this session in two parts. The first couple of minutes we'll spend talking about IPAM, DNS, and DHCP. That's referred as DDI, DNS, DHCP, and IP address management. We'll talk about these areas which have been significantly enhanced in Windows Server 2012. So we'll talk about functionalities in Windows Server 2012. And then I will, the most part of the session, I'll talk about the new advancements in IP address management in Windows Server 2012 R2. I'll also talk a little bit about the advancements in DNS and DHCP as well, which have been done in 2012 R2 release. And the second part of the session, so we'll talk about a specific functional area, like role-based access control, for example. And then we launch into a demo, and then come back and talk about the next functional area and so forth. Okay, the main takeaway that I would like you guys to walk out of this room with is Windows Server 2012 R2 IPAM provides a cost-effective, scalable, and customizable solution, which provides unified management of IP address space, both from a physical address space perspective as well as from a virtualized address space perspective, and also provides management of DNS, Microsoft DNS and DHCP service in both enterprise and the hoster environment. So I'll get on with the first part of this discussion, which is talking about the DDI, advancements in DDI in Windows Server 2012. Okay. So just to set the context, what are the kind of problems that IP address management solution solves, right? So any organization or enterprise has an IP address plan, and this IP address space is deployed in different geographies, in different locations, in different offices. From administrator perspective, administrator wants to visualize this IP address space, how it is deployed. He wants to track the utilization of this IP address space. Another common problem is, let's say you have a new device, like a printer, which needs to be provisioned into the network. Now, one part of provisioning that printer or that device is assigning it an IP address. So you need to get a free IP address from the subnet, create a DNS record for it, perhaps even create a DHCP reservation for it if it's a dynamic IP address range. The admin needs to keep a tab of DHCP scopes which are running full where clients are not able to get a DHCP service because the address space is exhausted for that subnet. And now he needs to provision additional scopes by means of, for example, a DHCP superscope on that particular DHCP server. Another common task that an admin has to do is, let's say he has to update the DNS server, which is distributed by the DHCP server. And let's say the DNS server has been migrated. Or he needs to update the WPAD, which is the web proxy auto detection location of that script. He needs to do it across multiple servers, across multiple scopes, and he needs to do this in an efficient manner. Businesses keep expanding. There's new offices getting set up. The admin needs to provision new address space for a new lab or a new office which is getting created, and reuse some of the IP address parameters or network configuration parameters as he sets up this new network. Last but not the least, on an ongoing basis, an admin needs to keep a track of configuration changes being performed by different administrators. He also needs, from a troubleshooting perspective or from a network forensics perspective, the admin needs to keep a tab of which IP address was assigned to which computer, and he needs to have a historical view, a view into the past of these assignments. So IP address management is not a new problem. It is a problem that enterprises have dealt with in the past, and there have been already solutions which have been there out there, which enterprises have been using. Interestingly, the most common way that enterprises have chosen to deal with this is to maintain the IP address space, do that tracking via spreadsheets. And a vast percentage of organizations still do this. They create IP address plan in a spreadsheet, assign owners for the different IP address plans, and for static IP addresses also are maintained in spreadsheets. Now this is cost efficient because there's no additional capital expenditure or software to be bought for this, and it works fine for small networks at first. But as the organization goes, it becomes increasingly difficult to keep these spreadsheets up to date. One inherent limitation in this spreadsheet is it's a static entity. It cannot provide. It doesn't do any DHCP or DNS server management. Right. So some organizations have done the next best thing, which is to build in-house tools for IPAM automation. Right. Which is great because now they can leverage. They can build the tool to their requirements. However, it's an expensive proposition because you need to have development staff to not just to develop the tool, but to keep it up to date, fix bugs. So on a long term perspective, it becomes an expensive proposition. Now there are a lot of commercial IPAM appliances which have been out there for quite some time. They're extremely feature rich. They have a rich feature set. They also manage Microsoft DNS and DHCP servers. But they also involve high acquisition cost, and many of them require additional consulting time or consulting hours to be dollars to be spent for deploying these solutions. So in Windows Server 2012, IPAM was a new feature which was introduced. It's an inbox solution with all the SKUs of Windows Server 2012. And it seamlessly integrates with DNS and DHCP servers, Microsoft DNS and DHCP servers. Now, there are four key functional areas to IPAM in Windows Server 2012. The first area is address space management. So essentially, IPAM allows you to plan, design, and have an address plan which is populated in the IPAM system, which can be managed out of the IPAM system. So that's address space management, and that caters to both static as well as dynamic, which is DHCP assigned addresses. So static IP ranges as well as dynamic IP ranges. Now the next thing, and I want to emphasize on this point, is IPAM doesn't, Windows Server 2012 IPAM doesn't require to install any agents on the DNS and DHCP servers. You can install IPAM, specify a domain, or a list of domains within your enterprise, and IPAM will automatically discover the DNS and DHCP servers as well as the domain controllers which are present in those domains. So we have tried to ease the deployment problem or deployment hurdle that an admin faces. Not only does it discover DNS and DHCP servers, all the existing configuration on those DHCP servers, so existing DHCP scopes, DNS zones which are present on this server, are discovered by IPAM and populated into the IPAM database and presented to the IPAM administrator. The third area is multi-server management. Now, this is pretty core to IPAM. IPAM provides a single console for managing your Microsoft DNS and DHCP servers. You don't have to connect to each DNS or DHCP server to manage that server. And lastly, the fourth functional area is IPAM audit, and there are two parts to it. There is IPAM configuration audit, which means any configuration change which is performed on the DHCP servers or any configuration changes which are done in the IPAM system itself, all those are logged in the IPAM system. So essentially, IPAM collects all the DHCP server configuration change events from the different DHCP servers and provides that view. And it also does that for the IPAM configuration events, which are performed on the IPAM system itself. The second part, so the first part is configuration audit. The second part is what is referred as IP address audit. And this is a functionality which gives you a historical view of which IP address was assigned to which computer in the past, and that computer being identified by the host name as well as the MAC address. And in addition, IPAM will also tell you which user had logged in from this system in that period of window. So you can go to the IP address audit functionality, specify a time window, specify an IP address, a MAC address, or a host name, and get this historical view of within that time window, this tuple of IP address, host name, and MAC address, as well as username. Complete information is presented. I believe this is something unique to the Microsoft IPAM offering as compared to other IPAM solutions which are out there. Okay, so in addition to enhancing manageability, we also enhanced the core infrastructure services as well in Windows Server 2012 significantly. And that's essentially DNS and DHCP servers. So DHCP was enhanced with a functionality called DHCP failover, a very, very commonly requested functionality by many customers. It provides you continuous availability of the DHCP service, and you can even deploy DHCP failover across multiple sites. So you can have a DHCP server in one location, have a DHCP server in a completely different location, in different subnet, different geography, set up a failover relationship between them, which means if the DHCP server at a local site goes down, that site will be served by the DHCP server at the remote site. We support both active-active and active-passive configuration, and it's based on an IETF least synchronization protocol. So both the DHCP servers, once you set up failover, they start synchronizing IP address leases. And thanks to that, the client will be able to get IP address continuity. What I mean by that is if the client has an IP address lease and the server which initially granted that lease goes down, the client will be able to renew the lease from a different server, from the other server in the DHCP failover relationship, because both the servers now have identical database thanks to the lease synchronization which is happening continuously between the two DHCP servers. The other big area was DHCP policies. What DHCP policies allows you to do is allows you to define groupings of devices. So you can define groupings of printers, a group of printers identified by the vendor or by the MAC address prefix. You can define groupings of, let's say, smartphones. And then you can set up specific DHCP options or network parameters for those groupings. You can also specify an IP address range. So the printers within a subnet can get IP addresses only from, let's say, .1 to .5 of that particular subnet's range. Right? You can also do it with VMs. Now, other big area of focus was PowerShell and networking, and this was all across networking. And in DNS and DHCP servers, we have provided almost complete PowerShell support. Both DHCP as well as DNS have 100-plus commandlets which shipped as part of Windows Server 2012, which enables complete automation of your DNS and DHCP server management and monitoring. The last blog that you see there is DNSSEC. That's an area on the DNS side that we invested significantly on. We provided online signing of a zone. While a server is up and a zone is operational, you can go and DNSSEC sign then zone. DNSSEC is a big protocol in terms of there are several specifications to DNSSEC, and we have implemented most of those specifications. We also provided the UI through DNS MMC, as well as PowerShell commandlets for setting up DNSSEC. Okay, so with that, let me launch into the first demo. which is address space management. So this is essentially, we'll take a quick look at one of the areas, which is address space management in IPAM. Okay, so what you see on your screen here is the IPAM console, and I'm in the IP address space pivot, and what I've highlighted here is IP address blocks. So essentially, IP address blocks are large contiguous pieces, blocks of addresses that that an admin initially configures. So you can see here that all these, you can view the utilization for all these blocks. And you can view both the private and the public IP address space here. And you can also look at IP address ranges, which is which are smaller blocks of IP addresses. And you can again you look at what is the start and the end IP address, what is, whether it is a static or a dynamic IP range. All that information is provided by IPAM. Also, you can look at what is the percentage of utilization of each of these ranges. Now, you can, here you can see a flat list of all the IP address ranges. But wouldn't it be great to see this utilization in a geographically distributed enterprise? You would like to see it in a sort of hierarchical way. And what IPAM provides is to build these hierarchies on the fly. So I'll just do a quick demo of a functionality called IP address range groups, right? So you can define groupings of IP address ranges, and that so and that builds a hierarchy, and we'll do that right away. So right now there are two IP address range groups, and we'll define a new IP address range group. So I'm adding a new IP address range group, and I'll group these initially by region, so because I want this hierarchy to be built based on the region, and next by country. You can see that right there. I'll give it a name called geo-based. And I've created this new IP address range group. Now, thanks to this IP address range group, now what I can do is you have this new pivot node which appears here called geo-based. And when I click on this, it will basically show how this IP address range ranges are have been deployed across the different geographies. So you can see, essentially, I'm able to view this IP address information on a per geography basis. So these are all the IP address ranges which are present in the Australia and New Zealand region. You can also look at the utilization. One interesting thing is now this utilization roll-up, which happens based on this new hierarchy. So for example, if a country in Asia a location in Asia is running hot, for example, Eastern Europe in this case, is running hot, it will propagate this this roll-up indication to the admin on a per geography basis. So that's how you can build hierarchies in IPAM. This is called IP address range groups. So I just demonstrated based on geo. You can do it based by function. Based on let's say HR, finance, sales, engineering, so forth. So you can build these hierarchies to your organization specific business needs. And all this capability is provided both in both for IPv4 as well as for IPv6. So with that, I'll go back to my slide deck.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
The source of that information is Active Directory?
Say that again, sorry?
That information.
No, the source of this information is coming from the IPAM system itself, And in the case, if it is a DHCP, it's a dynamic IP range, it's coming from the DHCP servers itself. So if your question is... Yes, those are essentially, you can import from an existing spreadsheet that you have, yes. But if your question is around, many times I get this question when I do the IPAM session is, the Active Directory sites and subnets, can that information be pulled into IPAM? So yes, just hold on to that question. I talk about that later on in the session. Yeah, you can import it via spreadsheet. Actually, towards the end of the session, I talk about integration with external systems. So if you could just hold on till then, and I'll talk about it. Okay, so much about Windows Server 2012, but the significant enhancements in IPAM in Windows Server 2012 are two. So let's start talking about that. So before we I talk about the functionalities, I also want to take a couple of minutes to talk about how the deployment context for networking has changed significantly over the last couple of years. So the picture that you see on your screen actually represents how a typical hoster or enterprise, which has multiple data centers, and networking has to be provided across these multiple data centers of the hoster or the enterprise. Not only do they have these data centers, but they also have, with the advent of virtualization, you have virtualized data centers. And with what I mean by that is you have this concept of layered networks or virtualized networks which come into play. So this concept of cloud networks is becoming more and more prevalent as we see in the enterprise as well as in the hoster deployments. Now, if it's a Microsoft-powered cloud, then you have SCVMM, System Center Virtual Machine Manager, which is used to manage this virtualized data center or the private cloud deployment. The other angle to this is now, in a large enterprise, you have several administrators having different roles. So you have system administrators who deal with, who manage the infrastructure services. You have network administrator who actually manages the physical network. And then you have, with private cloud deployments, you have fabric administrators who manage the virtual networks or the layered networks on top of the physical network, right? So, this is the sort of the deployment context that IPAM in 2012 R2 attempts to address. Okay. So again, I'll talk about these as four functional areas that have been newly provided in Windows Server 2012 R2. In Windows Server 2012, as we saw, the address space management only catered to the physical address space management. Now, in 2012 R2, we provide the IPAM provides for unified administration of both the physical address space as well as the virtualized address space. So to borrow terminologies from the other sessions that you might have attended, it's the provider IP address space, as it is called, as well as the customer IP address space. And IPAM provides you a single console for unified administration of these address spaces. Which are prevalent in cloud-based networks. In light of that, IPAM provides integration with SCVMM, and we'll look at that functionality in greater detail in a minute. The other area is role-based access control. So you can now define roles in IPAM, let's say you can create roles like a DHCP scope administrator or a DHCP DHCP reservation administrator or address space administrator. And it provides a very fine-grained way of configuring these roles and setting up these roles. And in addition to defining these roles, you can also delegate permissions. So let's say you have an administrator who is in charge of a specific data center, but he has other administrators under him, who are his subordinates or on his staff. That administrator can delegate permissions of, let's say, one DHCP server or a couple of scopes on the DHCP server to a specific individual on his team. DHCP server management, this is the third area which has been significantly enhanced in IPAM in 2012 R2. DHCP failover, which was a new functionality in Windows Server 2012 DHCP, now that is manageable via IPAM, so you can create failover relationships, you can monitor these failover relationships. DHCP policies can now be created via IPAM. Other DHCP management functions like configuring MAC address filters, configuring superscopes, configuring DHCP reservations, all that is now possible through Windows Server 2012 R2 IPAM. Now, one key feedback that we have heard, we had heard in Windows Server 2012 was with respect to, so IPAM was using this database called Windows Internal Database, which is a database which ships with Windows Server. It's called WID, Windows Internal Database. Many enterprise customers wanted to use an external database like a SQL Server. And with that, they get the capabilities of making that database highly available because it holds critical information. You can do backup, restore, you can do further reporting on top of that SQL Server database, right? So IPAM allows, now you can have an external database. In fact, the demo that I'm doing later essentially uses a SQL Server backend instead of the internal database backend. Extensive PowerShell support that has been newly added in 2012 R2. Again, 100 plus PowerShell commandlets which allow you to do anything that you can do in the IPAM UI, GUI, is now possible via IPAM PowerShell commandlets. So in a nutshell, it supports network automation for a virtualized data center as well as cloud environments, catering to both the enterprise as well as hoster scenarios. Okay, so let's just take a minute to look under the hood at the architecture. Some of you who might have attended IPAM sessions before might recognize this diagram. So you have an IPAM server, which is the core of the IPAM system. Yeah, the clicker works. And you can manage that IPAM server via IPAM client, which you can install on a Windows 8.1 using RSET. And that talks to the IPAM server using Windows Communication Foundation Protocol. Now, what is new here in 2012 R2 is this role-based access control. So every access by an administrator, which is made, is throttled based on the access control which has been specified. You can install IPAM server with a Windows internal database, but you can also now have an MS Microsoft SQL Server, an external database that can be used. I talked about virtual address spaces and integration with SCVMM, so now System Center 2012 R2, or System Center VMM in particular, ships with an integration plugin for IPAM. And thanks to this integration plugin, all the IP address spaces which have been defined, which are present in IPAM, are synchronized back to IPAM server and back. And IPAM is also capable of doing this sync with multiple SCVMM instances. So if you have multiple data centers and you are using an SCVMM instance per data center, you can use a single IPAM system to synchronize this information from multiple data centers. The rest of this architecture remains largely same. So IPAM server uses the PowerShell and WMI to talk to the different DHCP and DNS servers. It talks to the domain controllers to get the logon events, the user logon information, based on which it provides this IP address audit trail that I talked about earlier. And it has this collection task which runs on the IPAM server. For example, the server discovery task runs periodically and discovers new servers which have been added. The configuration task runs periodically and discovers all the configuration and so forth. And these are the existing security groups which had existed in 2012 2012 IPAM. Yeah, so this, essentially, this communication is via the RPC protocol.
Quick question. As far as I know, you can use in the server 2012 timeline, you can use the IPAM server across domains, across forests. Can you do that now?
So you can do a cross domain, but cross forest is something that is still ahead of us. Okay, so let's the first functionality, as I talked about, is the management of virtualized IP address spaces. So let's take a minute to understand virtualized networks and virtualized IP address space. So you have a physical network or a enterprise which is deploying private cloud has a physical network, and the IP address that is used on this physical network is the provider IP address space. Now, what I'll bring in some SCVMM terminology so that we understand how this integration with SCVMM works. So a certain portion of this provider IP address space is carved out for your private cloud or cloud deployment. And that is what SCVMM refers to as, SCVMM refers to as logical network. So portions of your physical IP address space is used to create these logical networks. In a CVMM. On top of that, you have a customer network or a tenant network, which is referred as the VM network in VMM, and the IP address space, which is used for this VM networks, is customer address space, also referred as virtual IP address subnets. So essentially, you have this concept of near networks, or one IP. These are customer networks which are layered on top of the actual provider or the physical network. And you have, you could have multiple VM instances managing portions of this whole deployment. And you might, the rest of your provider network, which is not, for example, your office network, which is not related to your private cloud deployment or cloud deployment altogether, might be getting serviced out of DHCP service. So IPAM integrates with SCVMM, multiple instances, as I said, as well as DHCP servers, and it provides you this consolidated view of your entire address space. It also, through the sync from SCVMM into IPAM, you can also look at the customer address spaces. And here, as if you've attended some of the other networking sessions, including, for example, SCVMM, networking in SCVMM session. Essentially, this address space can be overlapping. So you can have different tenants within the organization, or in the case of Hoster, actual or different organizations can bring in their own IP address space to service this customer network or tenant network. And all that is synchronized into IPAM, and a single view is provided. Okay, so let's talk about how the IPAM and VMM integration workflow. So essentially, the way this workflow, with the advent of this virtualized address spaces, there are certain challenges that an administrator faces, right? And the challenge is essentially being able to, the administrator, in the absence of IPAM, has no view of which customer address space is deployed on which physical address space or which provider IP address space. The other challenge is being able to track utilization of both the provider IP address space, which is used by for your cloud deployment, and being used through SCVMM, and also the ability to track utilization in the customer address space or the virtualized network, right? So let's talk about a workflow to make these things clear. There's color coding in this thing animation. So there are tasks that a network admin does, which are colored in peach color, and then this blue color indicates fabric admin, which are done in SCVMM by the VMM administrator. So on the IPAM side, you would configure IP address space, you would configure subnets, pools, VLAN information, and you will make that available to SCVMM. And that information synchronizes back into SCVMM to provide networks, provide information on network sites and logical networks. Now, so logical networks will automatic, once the IPAM administrator makes this this address space available for cloud deployment, it reflects on the SCVMM side. We'll look at this in the demo again. Now, on the SCVMM side, any update which is made to the logical network that is synchronized back into IPAM, and the nature of these updates are, for example, pool utilization data. IP address space for logical networks is assigned to the different hosts, different physical hosts, that utilization data is synchronized back into IPAM, as well as individual IP address assignment to each physical host. That information also is synchronized back into IPAM to provide address utilization tracking of the PA space or the provider address space. Now, IPAM also does conflict detection. So if you have IP address space which is colliding, which is overlapping, and this is I'm talking about PA space, which should not have overlapping address space, that is detected by IPAM, and notification and updates are propagated back into SCVMM so that SCVMM administrator can take note of it. Now let's talk about the workflow from the other side, which is on the SCVMM side. The fabric administrator would configure the virtualized network, the higher layer network, configure the VM subnets and pools for it, and that will get synchronized back into IPAM, including pool utilization data as well as even what IP address is assigned to each individual VM. All that information is synchronized back into IPAM. And what that allows the network admin to do is to look at this inventory of the customer address space, and provides him a way to track this CA space, which he otherwise doesn't have visibility into. Okay, so with that, I'll launch into the second demo, which is IPAM and VMM integration. Okay, so this is my IPAM console, and you can see this new pivot here called virtualized IP address space. And what you have under this, so there are two nodes here, provider IP address space and customer IP address space. And under provider address space, I have multiple data centers. So I have Dublin data center, I have Haifa site data center, and so forth. So this is all my, what you see here is all subnets which are in the provider IP address space, as in the physical, the lower layer of the lower IP layer, right? Now, what I'll do is I'll demonstrate how I'll create a provider IP subnet and make it available to SCVMM. So I'm going to add IP address subnet, give it a name. Data center 4, and I'll give it a network ID, which is 50.40.30.0. Configure a /24 subnet there. And I'll enable network virtualization for isolation of for isolation purposes. And the provider IP address space that I'm going to pick is the Dublin data center provider IP address space. I'll also specify the logical network. So logical network that I'm specifying, which will reflect on the SCVMM side, is I'm picking on public for the sake of this demonstration. And network side is Dublin. I'm leaving the rest of the fields as is. Those at the back, not able to view this, very clear. Okay, that's the information that I provided, which is critical from a network virtualization point of view and from the point of view of synchronizing with SCVMM. Okay, so I created this IP address subnet. Okay, so there it reflects there. Now I'm also will create an IP address range under that subnet. So I'll specify the same subnet information here. And enable network virtualization and specify Dublin data center. Okay. Now, the other information which is critical for this information to get synchronized to SCVMM is called managed by service and service instance. Now, what I'm going to do is managed by service, instead of IPAM, I'm going to change it to VMM, and I'm going to pick a specific instance of the VMM service, which is vmm.contoso.com. Right? So essentially, this is what will cause the synchronization to happen between the IPAM system and the VMM system. I'm letting the other fields be as is. Okay, so that's complete, and I've configured this provider IP address space now and made it available to SCVMM. And so let's go to the SCVMM VM. So this is SCVMM console. Okay. And I'll go to the fabric here, and I'll this node here called network service, and you can see IPAM being listed here. So this is the plugin which the which SCVMM, which is running inside SCVMM and does the two-way sync between SCVMM and IPAM. So what I'm going to do here is I'll show you that initially this public logical network that I created, 50.40.30 as the subnet under it, is not present. I'm going to trigger this service. In real life, this would happen automatically. But for the sake of hastening this demo, I'm going to trigger this sync. And we'll look at the jobs here, and it will take a couple of minutes for this plugin to synchronize the data between SCVMM and IPAM. And then you will see this logical network being created called public with IP subnet as 50.40.30. Just takes a couple of minutes to complete here. Okay, so that's done. Now I'm going to go back to logical networks here, and now you can see that the subnet 50.40.30 is available as a provider IP or a logical subnet, logical network in VMM. Okay, and what I'll do here is enable this subnet for network virtualization, which means I'll be able to create VM networks in VMM on top of it. So I'm configuring it for network virtualization. That's done. And now what I'll do is I'll create a virtual network. So let's say I get a tenant either within my organization or in the case of hoster, an external company. So let's take an example of an external company here. And I'm creating a VM network or a virtual network which will ride on top of this provider IP network. I'll call this vStore as a company. And the logical network that I'm picking is the public network that we just synchronized from IPAM into VMM. Okay, I'm going to use Hyper-V network virtualization for isolation of this CA of this customer subnets or the tenant IP subnets. I need to specify a VM subnet. This is tenant IP space or customer IP address space. So I'll specify 172, sorry, this is the name. So I'll specify vStore VM network and specify 172.22.224.0/24 as my virtual network or virtual IP subnet. Okay, I'll leave the rest of the things as is, and now my VM network would be created. And now I'll create an IP pool within this virtual network. So I'll call it vStore IP pool. Next, and I'll specify a IP address range or IP address pool for this, which is 100 to 200. Okay, I'm just letting other things be as is, not specifying any of the other parameters that this wizard requires. And now my VM network for this particular tenant has been created in SCVM. Now that needs to be synchronized back into IPAM, so I'm going to go back to Fabric and my network service, which is IPAM, and trigger this plugin to synchronize this IP, the virtual IP subnet information back into IPAM, and we'll come and look at the customer IP address space and that information being available in IPAM. So it just takes a couple of minutes to complete. Now again, to emphasize, in actual deployment, this triggering of the plugin is, it wouldn't be required manually because it would do it on an automatic periodic basis. Okay, so that's completed. So now let's switch back to the IPAM system. Okay, and go back to customer IP address space. And that should show me now an IP address space for the new customer that I have. Okay, let me just, for purpose of visibility, let me just turn off this grouping. And you can see an address space called vstore address space, which has been created in the IPAM system thanks to this two-way sync. Now this is CA space information. So now you can view, I can go to IP address subnets, and this information would be available here, 172. Yeah, so vstore VMnet is synchronized into IPAM. And I can view what is the number of addresses, how many are utilized, all that address information utilization tracking is now possible via IPAM. Another thing before we move on to the next topic, now which let me go back to IP address spaces here for a minute and do the grouping. So IPAM provides us very nice views of grouping, and what I'm going to use here is group this customer address space is based on provider IP address space. Now what you see here, now let me zoom again, is the Dublin data center is hosting Loopy Tunes and Design Gems. So essentially you get a view of, let me use the clicker. Yeah, you get a view of which customer address space is running on top of which provider address space. So this is actually a surrogate for, this is the name of a provider IP address space, and these are the customer address spaces which are present. Okay. Now, so this is another piece of information that IPAM provides to you. You can also go into IP address subnet and do the same grouping. So you can now look at all the customer IP subnets which are deployed in this different data centers, or effectively on top of different provider IP address space. So you get this interesting relationship between customer IP address space and provider IP address space. So that's essentially the demo on IPAM and VMM integration. I'll move back to my slides. Okay. Now, the next topic that I'm dealing with is role-based access control. I really like this piece of functionality that we've built because it really provides fine-grained access control into the IPAM system. So there are a couple of constructs to understand here, and I'll talk about these. And there are basically steps labeled on each of these. So you initially you define something called a user role. User role is nothing but a group of operations that can be performed. So let's say create scope is an operation, or create delete scope, or create policy, DHCP policy is an operation. So user role is an aggregation of these operations which you need to define right up front. So for example, if you're creating a DHCP scope admin, all the operations on the DHCP scope that can be performed would be defined and aggregated into a user role, right? Next, you would essentially define an administrative boundary. So let's say your administrative boundary is based on data centers, or your administrative boundary can be based on specific DHCP servers, or even down to a specific DHCP scope. You want to only delegate one specific scope. So that needs to be defined, and that's called access scope in the IPAM role-based access control system. Now, you bring in a user identity, an actual user of the system, tie the user role and the access scope together, and that forms an access policy. And that's the third step out there. You define an access policy which ties the set of operations, which is the user role, the administrative boundary, and then the actual user identity to whom you're delegating permissions. Another thing that you need to do is associate this access scope that you defined. So let's say you have defined access scope called Campus 3. You need to associate this Campus 3 access scope with the servers or the scopes which are there in that that Campus 3. Now, for leaf objects, so let's say, for example, scope within a DHCP server, that the scope within a DHCP server can be assigned a different access scope, or it can basically inherit the access scope from its parent, right? So this whole system provides a very fine-grained access control system. Okay, so before we go into the demo of RBAC and the whole DHCP management, what this picture shows you here is how IPAM looks at your DNS and DHCP server service infrastructure. So you have multiple DHCP servers or multiple DNS servers which work together to provide the DHCP or DNS service for your enterprise. You might have DHCP failover relationships, which now IPAM helps you manage and monitor in 2012 R2. You have DHCP policies which can be configured, scopes. From a monitoring standpoint for DHCP, IPAM allows you to monitor the utilization and also the trending information. So historical trends can be seen for a specific IP subnet, both for static as well as for dynamic IP ranges. Right? For a DNS service, we monitor the zone health. So if there are any replication errors, critical replication errors that are flagged in the zone health for a DNS, that has been there in 2012 as well. We also indicate the availability of a particular DNS service. Zone health is also indicated based on whether all the primary servers are up or some of the primary servers are down, which give a yellow indication, right? So essentially, a lot of advancement has been made in DHCP server management on top of what was provided in 2012. Okay. So with that, I'll go back into my next demo, which is DHCP management and RBAC. So here I'll do a couple of demonstrations. The first one I'll do is with failover. I'll show you how to basically you can configure a DHCP failover relationship using IPAM 2012 R2. Then I'll look at RBAC, basically specify a role, and then we will log out and log in as that. I'm now logged in as administrator, so I'll log out and log in as that user who has been delegated specific permissions and attempt that operation. Okay, so let me go back to DNS and DHCP, monitor and manage, which is the multi-server management node. So you can see the different failover relationships which already exist in this IPAM system. These are already configured. IPAM also discovers pre-configured failover relationships. So if you have 2012 DHCP deployed, you have a failover relationship. IPAM 2012 R2, you install IPAM 2012 R2, it will discover those failover relationships. So all these are existing failover relationships. You can look at which is the primary or secondary server, the mode, whether it is active-active or active-passive, which is the hot standby, and the status of the service. In addition to that, you can look at the relationship properties down here. And you can also look at the DHCP scopes, which are part of this failover relationship. And then there's event catalog, which shows you all the events, configuration change events, which have happened related to this specific failover relationship. Now I'll go into DHCP scopes, and this, excuse me. And this shows me all the DHCP scopes, and this is all this has been there in 2012 as IPAM as well. I'm going to create a failover relationship. So before that, I'll do the group by functionality and group by failover relationship name. Okay, so I see the different scopes under different failover relationships here. And I see that two of the scopes are not part of a failover relationship. So I'm going to pick on one of them, which is 10.10.8.0 here, and I'm going to configure it for failover. And let's see how easy this is through IPAM. I right-click and say configure failover, and it brings up the failover configuration UI. And instead of creating new, I'll add this to an existing failover relationship. And this if you noticed, this scope was present on dhcp2.contoso.com. So I'll pick the partner server, which is dhcp1.contoso.com. And I'll pick up a relationship name, let's say JP Japan Tokyo Campus Failover 2. Now, when I pick that relationship name, what IPAM automatically did is populated all these advanced properties of the failover relationship. Those were automatically populated, right? Okay. And now I'm going to hit apply, and that will add this scope to the existing to an existing failover relationship. So essentially, what is now happening is a PowerShell command is IPAM is running a PowerShell command to add this scope to the existing failover relationship. And in just a couple of seconds, you will see this progress dialog, which shows the progress being made on adding this scope to the failover relationship. Takes a couple of seconds to complete. So it has completed successfully, as you can see here. Okay. And so I have now added this scope to the failover relationship. So let me hit F5. And now under JP Tokyo Campus FO2, you can see 10.10.10.8.0. And the reason you see two copies is because now, as part of creating the failover relationship, the scope also got copied over to the partner server. So, and IPAM collected that information as well and is showing both these scopes, identical scopes, which are present on this servers, right? And yeah, so that's about failover. I'll now move on to role-based access control. So I have this access control node, and you can see, okay, I have left something which when I was practicing this demo, I'll just delete it. Okay, so there are built-in roles, which is basically, as I was telling, a group of operations, right? So what I'm going to do is create a new role. So I'll say add user role. And what I want to bring to your attention here is the kind of granularity that is provided in the system. For example, you have all the DHCP server operations. You can pick specific operations that you want to delegate. Sorry. DHCP scope operations, DNS zone operations. All these have been clubbed into a higher level grouping, but you can also go down and select specific give him very specific permissions. So what I'm going to do here is create a policy, DHCP policy administrator role. So I provide a configure DHCP policy permission, edit DHCP scope policy permission, and delete DHCP scope policy permission. I'll specify a role, which is DHCP scope policy admin. And that has now created this role, which is basically an grouping of the task, admin task. Now specify an access scope. Again, let me just delete this. Okay. So access, I can add an access scope, which is basically an administrative boundary. So I have some administrative boundaries already defined. By default, you will just have global, which is a high level, highest level, which encompasses all the management objects in IPAM. So I'm going to, what I'm going to do is, under Tokyo, I have campus 1 and campus 2. I'm going to now add a campus 3, which is a new administrative boundary. So campus 3 has been added. So a new access scope, campus 3, has been defined. And now I'll specify an access policy. Okay. So the way to specify an access policy is to bring the user, the role, and access scope together. So I'll search for a specific user in my directory, which is contoso.com. And I have a user called test. Okay, so I'll pick on test as the user. And I'm going to specify the role and access scope. So all the roles are listed here. I'm going to pick on DHCP scope policy admin, and then pick on campus 3 and do add setting. Let me just zoom for a minute to show you what I just did. I specified a user, actual user identity, specified a role, and specified an access scope. So all three are bound together in this access policy. And I'm going to hit apply, and that is now created. It is now creating this access policy on the IPAM system. Next, what I need to do to complete this this exercise of delegation is to go to. Let me just again do the grouping based on failover relationship name. And go to these two scopes, the specific scope that I just added for a failover relationship. I'll specify the access scope on these, and I'm going to specify this new access scope, which is campus 3. So this becomes an administrative boundary. I'm saying that 10.10.8.0 is within the administrative boundary or the access scope, which is referred by campus, which is referred to as campus 3. It takes a few minutes. Few seconds to reflect that. So you can see here that is reflected. And now I am ready to log out from this system and log in as test. So I'm going to go to do switch user. So now the permissions that I have given is just DHCP scope policy permissions. Okay, so I'm going to log in as test, password. Okay. Start the IPAM console here. And I'm going to go to this DHCP scope, which is 10.10.8.0, and configure a policy. Now, while I'm doing that, I'm going to use a new DHCP server functionality called FQDN policy, which was not there in 2012, but which has been added newly in 2012 R2. So you can now create policies based on the DNS name of a client. So I'll add a condition which is based on fully qualified domain name, and I'll say not equals, and I'll say I'll just mention in a minute why I'm picking that operator. Use a wildcard, prepend, add, and add condition. So now I have a condition which says if the fully qualified domain, I'm defining a grouping saying fully qualified domain name is not contoso.com. So these, essentially I'm trying to create a scenario where of computers or devices which are not part of your enterprise domain, right? And I can now specify a different DNS suffix under which these clients should be registered. So I can say all these should be registered under guest.contoso.com. Now, one limitation of the FQDN policy is you can't, unlike other DHCP policies where you can specify IP address range and options, you can't do that with FQDN policy because of certain protocol limitations. But if you were to pick on a different condition, like a vendor class or a MAC address, you would be able to do that. So with that, I will hit apply. And as I'm logged in as test, okay, it says the policy already exists. So let me just quickly go and delete that policy. Okay, so policy is deleted. So I'll attempt this thing again. Group by failover relationship name. Go to the scope, which is 10.10.8.0, and do the same, configure policy. Specify it as a FQDN policy. Specify a condition which is based on the fully qualified domain name, which is not equals, and contoso.com. Use wildcard, and I'll say append wildcard here. Hit add and add condition. And I'll specify the different DNS domain under which this client should be registered by the DHCP server. Apply, and that should complete. Yes, and as you can see, because this was a failover scope which exists on two servers, it actually created this policy on both the scopes. So it did that automatically. So if you go, we can go and look at this policy which we had earlier deleted, and now we have recreated it, and you can see that FQDN policy is present, and there are two instances because of the failover scope which was there. Okay, so that basically completes my essentially a demo of. I can just show you that I'll not be able to do anything else on that scope. I'll get an error saying I don't have access. Okay, and I'll go to edit scope and specify. Four hours, I'll try to change the lease duration and hit apply. And this operation failed because the logged in user doesn't have permissions. Okay, I'm not able to zoom in here, but you can see that the operation is not allowed for the logged in user. Okay, with that, I'll go back to my slide deck for the last part, and where we had some of the questions coming up. And this is now one of the critical parts of an IPAM system is the ability to integrate with external systems. So there are several other systems which have IP address information. So there is SCCM, which is Systems Center Configuration Manager database, which has IP address information. There's Map Toolkit, which again has some IP address information. Thanks to the PowerShell support that we have added, now you can basically set up a synchronization using a PowerShell script between SCCM or using the map toolkit and the IPAM system. And this can be a two-way sync. And SCCM, for example, can use this information to set up certain policies, for SCCM-related policies. For example, if the address utilization is zero, which means there are no clients on a particular IP subnet, do not push any patches to it, or push specific patches to remote access clients for IP subnet, which is for remote access clients. All those kinds of higher-level scenarios can be enabled by integration between IPAM and other systems. I'll show a quick demonstration using ICMP ping, where you can basically ping all the systems within a particular subnet, and using IPAM PowerShell commandlet, pull all that information into the IPAM system, and that starts reflecting into the IP address inventory. So that's basically a network discovery scenario that I'll just demonstrate in a minute. Now, IPAM also allows, thanks to the PowerShell commandlets, it also allows you to basically integrate with AD sites and subnets. AD sites and subnets also have IP subnet information, as well as site information. And that can be synchronized back into IPAM, and basically there can be a two-way sync between AD sites and subnets and the IPAM system by basically writing a small PowerShell script. So Active Directory also has PowerShell commandlets. So using that as well as the IPAM PowerShell commandlets, you can set up this sync. Now, what really enables syncing between IPAM system and a lot of these external integrations, external systems, is there are several, IPAM allows this concept of custom fields. So any field which IPAM natively doesn't understand can be defined as a custom field, and that information can be imported into IPAM. So that enables, let's say, SCCM uses a different field, or AD sites and subnets uses a different field. All those can be populated as custom fields by specifying new custom fields in IPAM. Okay. So I'll go into my last demonstration, and for that I'll have to log out and log back in, or rather I'll have to log in as administrator. Okay. Oops. Okay, let me start Server Manager again. And while I'm doing that, I'll show you the PowerShell commandlet. So ping sweep essentially is a PowerShell commandlet, PowerShell script that I'll run. It simply does ICMP ping, and if it gets to know that the IP address is alive or the client is alive on that particular IP address, it populates that IP address into the IPAM system using the IPAM PowerShell commandlet. So I'll start this ping sweep. Okay, I should have shown you an IP address inventory before that. Okay, so here is the IP address inventory, which is getting populated as I started this script. And this is basically pinging all the IP addresses in this subnet, 10.10.1.0. And whenever it finds it gets a ping response, it populates the IPAM system for those IP addresses for this particular subnet. I'll quickly demonstrate another integration scenario, which is basically DNS record import from a DNS server. And for that, I'll go to the domain controller, which is running my DNS server. And you have this Singapore 01.contoso.com, which has a host of DNS, a large number of host records. And okay, and I'll use again a PowerShell commandlet, which is invoke IPAM DNS record import. This is a IPAM PowerShell commandlet, which will basically pull in all the DNS records from this DNS server back into IPAM, and we'll look at go back into IPAM and look at this information. So, okay, so I've started this script. Now let's go and look at these records getting populated in IPAM. Okay, so you can see all these host records are now getting populated into IPAM. Okay, so basically, you can essentially set up these different synchronization mechanisms between different external systems. I just demonstrated two of them. We actually have a script which is out on TechNet Script Center, which allows you to do synchronization between AD sites and subnets and IPAM system. So feel free to try out that script for the integration, because I hear that I often, when I've done these sessions at TechReady or at TechEd, I often the common question is, can I synchronize between AD sites and subnets and IPAM? And yes, you can do that. Okay. Right, so. See, sorry?
You were talking about that you can have a custom feed.
Yes.
Yeah. And I suppose that's what you do using when you use, for example, the thing in suite.
Yeah.
So can you see that in the UI?
Yes, you can see that in the UI.
Where it's coming from?
Yes, yeah. You can. So essentially, you can, in the UI, you can, all these custom fields are basically, you can add them as columns into that view. Though they may not be present by default, you can easily add those columns, and you can view that information. So quickly, a quick roundup. So we looked at, we did a quick sneak preview of what came in Windows Server 2012, DNS, DHCP, and IP address management. We also looked at, what are the new advancements in Windows Server 2012 R2 IPAM. I just want to take a minute to talk about DNS and DHCP. So DHCP, one of the advancements I mentioned was this FQDN policy. So DHCP policies now can be created based on the DNS domain of the client. Another feedback that we have heard was DHCP failover couldn't be set up for boot P scopes in 2012. So that limitation has been removed. I got a lot of customer feedback around that, because people hit, when they're trying to deploy DHCP failover, there were scopes which were boot P scopes, or scopes which supported both DHCP and boot P client. So we have removed that limitation, so you can now configure DHCP failover even for scopes which support boot P clients. On the DNS side, there is a specific statistic-related announcement that we did. Up until 2012, you could only get query statistics information or zone transfer statistics information aggregated for across all the zones on the DNS server. Now you can get that on a per-zone basis. So this is more from a service provider point of view. So if you're running, let's say, a DNS as a service, and you want to do billing, or you want to do billing for customers when you're hosting these customer zones, you do that billing based on the number of queries received. So we've done that to enable customers to do this billing. Also, this statistics is available on a per record type basis. So essentially, how many queries were received for A record type as opposed to quad A record type or MS record type. So per zone query statistics is a new functionality on the DNS side, available and can be accessed via PowerShell commandlet. So just to wrap up, takeaway, of course, as I said, is 2012 R2 IPAM provides a cost-effective and scalable customizable solution designed for both hoster and enterprise environment, and which helps you deal with virtualized address spaces and private cloud deployments, right? So with that, please download the bits, try it out, give us feedback. We're very keen to hear from you. The bits just went out earlier this week. And we're towards the end of the conference, so most of these sessions, the related content is done. But please, you can look at this. This will be up on channel 9, so you can look at this. So with that, I can now take a couple of questions. Please fill up the feedback so that I can do a better job next time. and I can take questions now.
How are you doing overlapping IP addresses?
So are you?
Yeah, RFC 1918 overlapping IP addresses. How does ICANN manage that?
So essentially, it basically flags an overlapping IP address space. If you're talking, if your question is with respect to provider IP address space, we actually flag. There's a specific column again in the view which says this address is these two ranges are overlapping and colliding between the two.
Okay.
That's.
But you can manage them as normal. And
yes, you can continue to manage them. It's just a flagging to the administrator to for him to take cognizance of.
Yeah. Is there the orchestrated?
Say that again.
Orchestrated integration.
There isn't any orchestration, orchestrator integration product. I've heard this feedback before, so I think if you could just drop me an email about specific scenarios that you would be interested in, that would be great feedback for us going forward. So I can just give you my email address. And, but right now, there isn't anything. But you, I believe you should be able to, using the IPAM PowerShell commandlets, you should be able to build a workflow in Orchestrator. That's my thinking. But
so
we haven't tried out.
So you can use the PowerShell commands to
talk to
query for available IP addresses.
Yes. Yes.
Assign.
Yes.
This is only an R2, not in the.
No, this is there even in 2012. So in 2012, in 2012 there's a DHCP PowerShell commandlet, which you can get a free IP address. And in 2012 R2, we have also provided that at the IPAM level.
Okay.
So you can basically get a free IP address within a specific IP subnet.
But not through IPAM.
In 2012 R2, it is possible through IPAM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not in 2012.
Not in 2012, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So, regarding my question earlier about cross-forest scenarios.
Yeah.
Many forests for several customers.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to, is there a possibility to use IPAM as a general, not integrated, of course, with DNS and DHCP and stuff, but just a general planning tool on the top by doing export import?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's possible. You can basically do export import via this PowerShell commandlets and use it that way. Cross forest support is on our list, on our radar, because we have heard that even from within enterprises and hoster scenarios seems very relevant as well. Question mark. I'll get that.
You were talking about the AD integration, being able to import the sites and services and subnets.
Yeah.
Does it then create those sites in IPAM?
Yes. So again, site will, as I was talking about this custom field, site will appear as a custom field on this IP address subnet. So it will appear as a.
Create the subnet range.
Yeah.
And then site would be a custom field.
Custom field, yes.
Would it be able to then pull in the hosts that are using those IP addresses from the DNS?
So these are two different scenarios. One is essentially the host information can be pulled from DNS and imported, this, which is what I demonstrated. And a separate sync can be set up between AD sites and subnets. And you can pull the site information as part of the subnet and tag that subnet with that as a custom field, with site as a custom field.
Okay. So, but it doesn't do the two together, so you have to do two separate syncs.
You have to do these two separate syncs, yes.
So if you do the,
does it merge?
That's the question. Does it merge? That's the question.
Yes, exactly.
So if you pull in the site and services, and
yeah.
Then you query DNS, does it put those hosts in those subnets that is pulled from services?
It should be possible to do that. So it would be possible to write the script in such a fashion that when the host record is pulled from DNS, it shows up under a specific IP subnet. But let me confirm that. So if you can just leave your email, I can get back to you on that specific thing. Thank you.